This is Pete Paskovich. Today's date is February 19th. The program title is the North Attleboro Sun Chronicle. And the publication date is also Thursday, February 19th. Good morning, and today I'll be reading the North Attleboro Sun Chronicle. And the headline today is "You Just Can't Walk. Unshoveled sidewalks stir worries in Attleboro." Large ice-covered snowbanks blocked city sidewalks following multiple winter storms have left some people worried about their safety. Margaret Medici, a 63-year-old resident with disabilities, has been especially vocal with the city about her concerns and wants to see action taken. As in prior years, sidewalks throughout Attleboro remain hazardous and, in many locations, completely impassable weeks after snowfall. Medici wrote in an email to Mayor Kathleen DeSimone. Public Works Superintendent Mike Tyler, several other city officials, and the Sun Chronicle, while private parking lots and storefront entrances have been cleared to bare pavement, adjacent public sidewalks, taxpayer-funded rights-of-way, have frequently been left covered in snow and ice. Numerous snowstorms from mid-December through this month, with one storm in late January dropping almost 2 feet of snow, on the region, combined with temperatures dipping well below zero, have left mounds of hard snow along most city streets and sidewalks, making both driving and walking difficult. Other cities with dense centers, including Boston, Providence, Fall River, and Worcester, are also experiencing similar situations. Medici said that while she understands it is not the city's responsibility, nor within its bandwidth to shovel all the sidewalks outside businesses and personal residences, she questioned what the expectations are for personal entities to do so and whether clear instructions are provided to them by the city. City Council Vice President Laura Doolin, who chairs the Public Works Committees, said at one point there had been an ordinance requiring business owners and residents to shovel their sidewalks, but that was done away with in 1999 because some elderly and disabled residents were unable to shovel. Tyler said he would like to see the return of such an ordinance, at least for areas with heavy foot traffic, such as Pleasant Street. He said his department has fielded numerous complaints about the sidewalks this season, making it the top issue. Some residents, he said, feel that as taxpayers, it is the city's job to take care of sidewalks. I think the mindset is we're supposed to be all working together, he said. That's how we all get through these storms. Tyler said while the city does have machinery to clear the sidewalks, they often require snowblower attachments, which slow the process down immensely. And between limited staff and machinery, over 100 miles of sidewalks in the city and having to prioritize main roads and parking lots, it's not feasible for the city to clear it all. It's not a good situation, he said. I completely understand the aggravation. Doan also said another issue is where to put the snow. We had to move the snow to Haywood Field, she said. She did, however, that ordinances do currently state snow cannot be shoveled into streets or sidewalks from driveways or storefronts. Ideally, I would love every sidewalk to be cleared, Dolan said. It's just not feasible. Medicaid explained the conditions residents are currently facing. You're trying to go up the street and you just can't walk, Medicaid said. It's like you can walk maybe a... Pause it again. It's like maybe you can walk a couple yards where they've cleared it, and then you've got a mountain of snow, or you've got a patch of ice, or you have something that is so narrow you couldn't possibly get through. The result, she said, is residents, including parents with baby carriages, children on their way to school, and elderly and disabled people like herself, have to walk in the middle of the street. It is illegal for me to walk in the street, as it should be, she said, but what are you supposed to do? She said, while many... She said that while many sidewalks across the city are not shoveled out, Park Pleasant and County streets are among other main streets. This next article is headlined, Town Officials Stand Ground on World Cup License, saying they want money up front. Frustration continues to grow among town officials as they fight for funding for security to host the World Cup soccer games this summer at Gillette Stadium. Town officials, again at a select board meeting Tuesday night, vowed not to approve an entertainment license for the high-profile soccer games unless they get funding and other requests fulfilled. The town applied for a federal grant of about $7.8 million for security, training, building, equipment expenses, and medical and communication needs, but the funding hasn't arrived and it's doubtful it will get that much. Representatives of the FIFA World Cup Boston Host Committee appeared before the board but gave no definitive answers. All we're asking for is a collaboration that gets us the answer as to who will pay, Select Board Chairman Bill Yukma said. It's obvious an NFL game on steroids. It's the equivalent of 7 Super Bowls here. Local officials say the town doesn't have the funding and won't subject taxpayers to the bill for the international event. All we're trying to do is protect our citizens, Yukna said. It boggles my mind that we still have no idea where the money is coming from, board member Eric Elfman said. I'm shocked they're not telling us where the money is coming from. I'm flabbergasted. This should have been done today. It was learned about 3 years ago the World Cup was coming to Foxborough, officials noticed. This is not a moneymaker for this town. In fact, it's probably more of a headache than it's worth, board vice chairwoman Stephanie McGowan said. Host committee members acknowledged they are responsible for public safety under the hosting agreement. We are not looking to put the town of Foxborough at risk, CEO of the Boston Host Committee, Mike Loynd, said. The Kraft Group bid on the World Cup and is leasing the stadium to FIFA, but hasn't officially committed to paying for security costs. The Kraft Group told us they aren't technically responsible, Jukna said. The Kraft Group, Loynd said, has agreed to provide a liquidity agreement, which he said protects specifically all the public safety payroll. Loynd said that amounts to a substantial amount of the federal grant and public safety costs. He estimated it at 80% or more. Kevin Clark, director of venue operations for FIFA, deferred comment at the meeting to the Boston Host Committee. The town and applicant World Cup governing body FIFA have until March 17th to complete the license, but local officials emphasize time is running out to prepare for the games that will run over 39 days starting in June. This community has done everything we can. We have plans to run a very safe event. We're doing cartwheels, doing what is needed to get done, McGowan said of town officials and departments. We're doing so much to try to have this event go well. We're not prepared to issue the license if everything isn't in place. As a small town of about 18,000 residents, this is almost 10% of our budget, she said, of the security funding. There is no way we can fund it. We can't do this to our taxpayers. We aren't in our mind making enough progress. We're working diligently, waiting for the federal award to help us address the issues that need to be addressed, Loynd said. I think we're headed in the right direction. Town officials continue meeting with representatives of Governor Maura Healey's office, Matt Dodd officials, and Boston representatives. We continue to work on this effort, town manager Paige Duncan said, adding in-town and out-of-town meetings on the World Cup event are pretty much held daily. And this next article, also from the front page of the Sun Chronicle, area home sales hit a deep freeze. Most communities see drop as cold and snow takes its toll. If you thought it was cold outside in January, area home sales slowed in the deep freeze, the Peabody-based Warren Group reported Tuesday. January is typically a sluggish month for home buyers, but last month was even slower than the year before, with sales numbers down in 9 out of 10 communities covered by the Sun Chronicle. While prices rose year to year in 8 out of the 10, that was consistent with numbers around Massachusetts, according to the Warren Group, which tracks sales and mortgage activities statewide. Sales were also down nationwide, the Associated Press reported last week. There were 2,305 single-family home sales in Massachusetts in January, a 12.7% decrease from January 2025. Meanwhile, the median single home price increased 4.7% on a year-over-year basis to $612,500. Home sales that closed in January went under agreement in November or December of last year. The holidays are not a popular time for house hunting, said Cassidy Norton, spokesperson for the Warren Group. The lack of inventory also contributed to a drop in sales and an increase in price, she added. Locally, Attleboro lost its long-standing distinction as the least expensive housing market in the area. The median price of a single-family home in the city was $499,950, up just 1% on 16 sales, down from 19 the year before. Norton, with a median price of $465,000, was last place for price-conscious home buyers to shop last month, although that's still an increase and nearly 13% over last year. Sales were flat, however, as just five homes sold this January and last. Mansfield sales were also unchanged year to year, with just four closings. But the town has the only one in the area to crack the $1 million mark, with a median sale price of $1.08 million, an increase of nearly 40% over last January. Wrentham's sales were also unchanged at four closings, and the median sales price Wrentham's sales were also unchanged at four closings and the median sales price down 4.6% to $567,500. Norfolk, with four sales compared to 11 last year, came in second in median price at $927,500, a hike of nearly 16% over last year. North Attleboro was the only town where sales numbers were actually up over last year, with 14 sales last month compared to 8 in January 2025, with a median price of $697,500, up 24%. Foxborough sales numbers dropped from 7 to 5, but the median price of a home jumped more than 41% to $875,000. No homes were sold in Plainville for the month, not a great shock since a year ago there was only one sale. Rehoboth's median sale price was off 6.4%, the only town besides Wrentham to see a year-over-year decrease on three sales compared to nine last year. Seekonk sales fell from 11 to 2, a drop of 87%, the sharpest in the area, but the median price rose more than 67%. The highest in the area, to $805,500. Nationwide, sales fell 4.4% compared with January of last year. The latest sales figure fell short of the $4.105 million pace economists were expected, according to FactSet. Despite the sharp drop in sales, home prices continued to climb last month. The national median sales price increased 0.9% in January from a year earlier to $396,800. Home prices have risen on an annual basis for 31 months in a row. Tuesday's national average on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was 6.16%, according to Bankrate. Despite a small uptick in early February, mortgage interest rates have continued to hover in the 6% range over the past several weeks, still considerably lower than this time last year, the Wall Street Journal reported. And this next article, also from the front page of the Sun Chronicle, 50 years of finding customers the perfect fit. Footworks, an Attleboro shop offering both shoe repair and hard-to-find footwear, closes. In 1978, Gary Lavoie had a tree and plowing service in the Attleboros. That year's legendary blizzard pretty much knocked him out of business. It was a difficult time. He was married, had a child on the way, and little money in the bank. So he and his wife, Dorothy, took their tax return and started Footworks, a shoe repair business. Thinking about it, Lavoie said, it was quite a leap. Friends were asking us, why are you going into the shoe repair business? After 48 years, the 70-year-old Lavoie is retiring and closing Footworks, a business that has greatly evolved over the years. From a simple shoe repair shop, the Couture now specializes in custom orthotics, as well as selling some of the world's most finely crafted and expensive footwear. "We bought the world of shoes to Attleboro," he said. "Who would have thought I could sell $300 worth of women's shoes around here?" Lavoie always enjoyed working with leather. Working as a teen at Mutch's repair, shoe repair in downtown Attleboro. After the tree business failed, the shift to shoe repair was not too drastic. "My friends called me the Leather Man," he said. He and his wife launched Footworks in Norton, then added a second shop in Seekonk, but times were tough at first. "It was 3 or 4 years before we had a car that was worth anything," Lavoie said. "But when they opened a third shop on Pleasant Street in Attleboro, business started booming to the point that they closed the first two locations. Soon they were working with dry cleaning businesses in Providence. Customers would leave shoes at the same time they dropped off clothes. Lavoie or an employee would pick up bags of shoes, repair them, and have them ready in 24 hours. At one point, he had 2 shifts and 8 employees to keep up with the demand. By the 1990s, Lavoie knew he needed to grow the business in another direction from just shoe repair. So, in 1997, he enrolled at Oklahoma State University and became a board-certified pedorthist, a specialist in the craft of making custom-made orthotics. It not only helped him increase business, it made the job much more satisfying by alleviating customers' foot problems and related health complications. "Helping people, that's really the best thing about this job," Lavoie said. "People come in and they have some quirky issues. You can provide them orthotics that really help them, and you feel good about it." Testimonials on Footworks website attest to the faith customers have in the store and Lavoie. "With a staff that is always friendly and helpful, Gary is known as the guru of foot care," one customer wrote. "Footworks has my utmost confidence. I recommend them highly." Another wrote, "My feet love Gary Lavoie and Footworks. I walked into his shop with sore feet and walked out happy feet. Footworks further expanded when it added sales of high-quality shoes imported from around the world. That revenue stream was needed to replace the slowly declining business of shoe repair. The convenience of going online and buying shoes has changed everything," Lavoie said. "If you get nice stuff, you may repair it. If not, you throw them away and buy new ones." Store closing signs are hung inside and outside the store. The plan is to sell as much inventory before closing down, possibly by the end of March. Customers come in and beg him to change his mind. "Gary, you can't retire," they say. But Lavoie says the end of the era is just around the corner. "I'm going to miss it, but I know I've had enough." And this next article in the Sun Chronicle for February 19th, 2026. North Attleboro resident sentenced to federal prison for stealing mail and check fraud. 2 men, including a North Attleboro resident, have been sentenced to prison for fraudulently depositing checks stolen from the mail, the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts announced on Friday. Brandon Baez, 23, of North Attleboro, was sentenced Thursday in federal court in Boston by Senior District Court Judge Patty B. Saris to 2 years in federal prison, followed by 5 years of supervised release. Baez was also ordered to pay $10,285 in restitution. In November 2025, Baez pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit bank fraud, and conspiracy to steal and possess stolen bail. Emanuel Rios Franco, 26, of Canton, was sentenced Tuesday to 35 months in federal prison, followed by 1 year of supervised release. Rios Franco was also ordered to pay $12,528 in restitution. In November 2025, Rios Franco pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit bank fraud, and conspiracy to steal and possess stolen mail. From at least June 2023 until February 2024, the defendants and their co-conspirators stole mail from the U.S. Postal Service collection boxes looking to steal checks, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. After they stole the checks, they washed the handwritten ink from the checks, used commercially available chemicals. The checks were then reissued to the co-conspirators or other banks that they controlled. After the checks were fraudulently deposited, the defendants and their co-conspirators withdrew money from ATMs or bought money orders with those fraudulently obtained funds. A review of the co-conspirators' cell phones revealed they had collaborated to advance this criminal scheme. And that's it for today. Thank you for listening.